My name is Courtney Stevens, and I work at Belmont University in Nashville. I'm the Electronic and Educational Resources Librarian there. And this is the session called Technology Training Tune-Up, Computer and Technology Skills for All Library Staff. Today, I'm going to try to cover four things: technology training, core competencies, creating a training program, and then keeping up with technology and new technology and emerging technologies in your library and for your library staff. So that's a little overview. We'll jump right in. I'm going to cover six basic questions for technology training. They're not going to be in the usual order of who, what, when, where, why, and how, but I am going to cover those six questions. So what is technology training? Technology training is going to be, the main goal of it is going to be exposure to unfamiliar technologies like Web 2.0 technologies or other things that your staff might not know how to do. It's going to be building technology skills for your staff, troubleshooting printers, troubleshooting computers, PCs, all those things that we get asked on a daily basis at our service points that you may or may not know how to do or may or may not feel comfortable doing, and you know your staff are having trouble too. It's going to increase your staff comfort level, and it's also going to help increase the rapport of your staff so that they can work together a little bit better and know the other staff members that they can ask questions of and that sort of thing. The next question is going to be, what do they need to know? They're going to need to know about your current equipment. Your staff needs to know how to work the equipment that you have in the building right now. All those printers, all those computers, the microfilm readers, if you still have those, microfiche readers, all that stuff that you have to show patrons how to use, your staff needs to know as well. They are going to need to know if you're getting any equipment upgrades, if you're upgrading your printer or upgrading PCs or upgrading software. They're going to need some training on that too, preferably before you get the upgrade, so they have some idea of what's coming and how to help patrons sort of adjust to that change. They're going to need to know the current software that you've got, Microsoft Word, Office, all of those things that you may have, how to run your ILS, how to check out books, how to check a hold, how to find a book and find out whether it's on the shelf, why it's not on the shelf, all those things that we do every day. They're going to need to know core competencies, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about in just a couple of minutes, and also any new technology. As Barbara was talking about in the previous session, the Web 2.0 technologies, Flickr, Facebook, MySpace, all of those buzzwords that we've heard going around, social networking and that kind of thing. The next question is going to be, who needs training? All of your library staff need this training, whether they're on the front lines all the time or not. Reference, children's, young adult, tech services, your catalogers, that kind of thing. Consider it cross-training for your staff. This is going to be so that when you have to pull the cataloger out of tech services to cover your reference for when they have a reference meeting or something like that, they still have an idea of what to do once they get on that frontline desk. They don't have that panicked look in their eyes, deer in the headlights, all that kind of thing. So if you cross-train your staff, train everybody on all of the same things, everybody's going to feel comfortable working at all of the points in the library, or at least that's the hope. Who's going to train them? You can use existing staff to train them. If you have people who are sort of already tech-savvy, they seem to be the ones that everybody goes to for help. I was that person at one of my libraries. Everybody asked me, how do I do this on the computer? How do I get this printer to work? How do I do this sort of stuff? So it was natural for me to start leading computer classes and other trainings for people. So you can also go to an outside agency. If you have some funds that you want to use for training staff, you can ask different people do technology training. You can go to Best Buy or CompUSA or things like that when they were still in business. But there are lots of outside agencies that will do tech training for your staff as well if you just don't have somebody on staff who knows the skill you need to teach. Conferences, obviously you guys know that conferences are a good place to learn about things. You're all here. There's also e-learning. There's lots of websites available that will do free webinars that you can watch and participate in to do learning, online, which is kind of a version of an outside agency. Why should you train staff? I covered this a little bit already. It's going to improve customer service. Your patrons are going to get better service from staff that know how to answer their questions. And that's not just their questions about the library resources. It's the questions about the technology that patrons come in to use. We all know that patrons are coming into libraries more and more to use computers and that sort of thing because they don't have them at home or they don't have the internet at home. If we can't answer their questions, they're not going to stop coming to us because it looks bad. It's going to improve staff relations. If you're training all of your staff together and all of them are trained equally, they're all going to know sort of that they're on a level playing field. They're all valued equally and that you want to train them all the same way. Like I said before, it's going to improve their skills and their comfort level. They're going to be more comfortable working with this new technology and talking to patrons about it. It's going to increase just their plain exposure. They're going to know what some of these buzzwords mean, Web 2.0, Flickr, Twitter, Facebook, all of those things, they're going to at least have a clue about what they are instead of going, I don't know what Flickr is. I can't help you with that, you know, that sort of thing. It's going to provide them with new tools. They're going to learn new skills, hopefully, in this training that you're going to do. And it's also going to increase their loyalty. You're showing your staff that you care about them and their future education and whether or not they learn new things while they're working for you. You don't want them to just sort of stagnate in the position that they're in. So by showing your staff that you care about them, they will hopefully want to stick around a little bit longer and not change jobs and go somewhere else. When are they going to get trained? My only answer to this is on work time. And I know we're all busy. I feel swamped a lot at my own job. I don't know where I would squeeze in any training on things, but we've all made time to be here at this conference. So we know that we can make time to do these sorts of things. And again, by making time while your staff are at work to train them on things, you're showing them that you value them and their time and their training and that they're going to be able to learn things and that you're going to encourage that. If management doesn't prove to the staff that they care about the training and that they really want them to be able to learn, then the staff are not going to buy in and they're not going to care whether they actually learn the things or not. So it's really important to do this on work time. And some of the staff will be able to take this stuff home. They may have internet at home, computers at home, and that sort of thing. And they may get really interested in something and sort of further their education on their own at home. But a lot of people, and I'm one of these people, get home and go, I've been in front of a computer all day. I don't want to go home and have to do more work in front of a computer. I want to rest my eyes and, you know, relax and not worry about that sort of thing. So if you do it at work, if you make time for it at work, that's going to show you them that you value both their work time and their personal time. Where are they going to be trained? In the library. If you're doing it on work time, you can train them, you know, if you have the facilities. We've had a computer lab in both of the libraries that I've worked at Belmont and the one I was at before that. So you can, you know, take over the computer lab for a day or a couple of hours or something and hold staff trainings in there. You can try to find somewhere off-site if you don't have the facilities at your library. See if you can use another library's facilities. See if we can, you know, share resources and things like that amongst ourselves. Again, conferences are a good place to, if you can afford to, send a few people, do sort of a train-the-trainer kind of thing. Send 3 or 4 people to a conference to learn something new and then come back and tell the rest of the staff about it. How? There's lots of options here. I did sort of an either or list here. You can do ongoing training. You can do scheduled training. You can do self-paced or guided training. You can have teachers. You can have it be compulsory, absolutely required, which is the route some libraries are going. You can give them prizes and incentives if you have a budget to do training so that it's not compulsory, but you're making them really excited about it and they want to learn. You can do paid trainings where you pay somebody to come in or pay for a webinar or something like that. You can do free trainings. There's tons of stuff available on the web, and I'll show you where to find some of that stuff at the end. You can do local trainings if, you know, TLA is doing 10 share or something like that. Somebody else is doing something that's very local to your library. You can do those. You can do national conferences, regional conferences, Southeastern Library Association or ALA and that sort of thing. So there's lots of options for doing training, about how to train people. And those options that I just discussed are actually present in a lot of these things. Library 2.0 were 23 things, which is what the previous session was about, how to set that up at your library. There's another program called 5 Weeks to a Social Library. There's Friday socials or brown bag lunches. And also something that I'm really interested in is a technology petting zoo sort of thing. Library 2.0, or 23 Things, was created by Helene Flowers at the Public Library of Charlotte in Mecklenburg County. It was based on an article that she read by Stephen Abrams about 43 things, where he was talking about what 43 things he wanted to learn about in his lifetime or in the next year. It covers blogs, wikis, photo sharing, RSS, podcasts, and lots of other Web 2.0 things. It's free. It's available online. And, again, I have a list of links that are available that I'll show you guys. But it does require a web-savvy coordinator. At least one person in your library will need to know about most of these things before you get started and be able to coordinate and talk to your staff and all of that sort of thing about these sort of things. So at least one person's going to have to know something about these, maybe do the program before everybody else or something like that. But again, it is a free option, and it's something that you can take and sort of model to your library. Whether all of these things are going to fit your staff is questionable sometimes. 5 Weeks to a Social Library is created by Meredith Farkas and a team of librarians around the country. They collaborated virtually to create this program. It's 5 weeks, obviously. It's available online for free as well. It was a synchronous program where people from around the country we're getting together in chat rooms and seeing presentations and that sort of thing all at the same time. The program has since ended. The 5 weeks is over, but they have made everything available for people to use online. It covers blogs, wikis, photo sharing, Second Life. So if you're interested in learning more about Second Life, this might be a good place to start out with some of the information, social bookmarking, and also how to use 2.0 in your library, some ways that maybe your library can implement some things that you've learned about. And again, this one is also free, and it's available online for other libraries to use. One that is more sort of organic to your library is Friday socials or brown bag lunches. I have a friend at the University of Arizona's libraries who has been instrumental in implementing this program at her library, and it's just staff teaching staff. She was interested in 2.0 things and wanted to share what she knew about them with other staff at the University of Arizona library. So she started working with a couple of colleagues to do a Friday brown bag lunch thing, where they got together for an hour and everybody ate lunch together and they talked about Web 2.0 things, RSS feeds, Twitter, Flickr, podcasting, all sorts of different things. There's a variety of topics that they're covering. Again, this one requires tech or web savvy staff, at least one person who can be in charge of things and sort of help out by teaching and that kind of thing. But it is a pretty informal way to do things, just to sort of get together and chat. And if you only have an hour or two, you know, you could do this over lunch at your library or something like that. The one that I really like right now is the Technology Petting Zoo. And this one would require a little more effort maybe on the coordinator's part, because it's going to be actual hands-on time with gadgets. So you need to find either library staff that are willing to share their digital cameras and their iPods and their cell phones and whatever other tech-savvy gadgets they may have, you know, the Kindle or an e-book reader or something like that, willing to let other people play with it for a little while. This can also include software, so if you've got some software you want to give people hands-on time with, it's in a controlled environment where they know that they can't break something. This is their time to actually just get together and play with it and have a little fun with it. It provides exposure to things that you may never, ever use. I don't own any gaming systems, but if I were to participate in a technology petting zoo, I could play with a Wii, or I could play with an Xbox or a PlayStation or something like that. So it's going to provide a little bit of exposure to staff for things that they may never want to buy and they may never want to use again, but they've at least, you know, touched it once and they know a little bit about it and maybe can decide that, hey, that's kind of fun. Maybe I do want to buy one of those or something like that. The reason Best Buy is listed up here is because when I was doing research for this presentation, I discovered that Best Buy had worked with a library in Maryland through their Office of Community Development to provide this library with some of the gadgets that they needed to have a petting zoo. So if you want to have one of these and your staff doesn't have a lot of gadgets or something like that, try talking to Best Buy or Circuit City or something like that and see if they have a community outreach program where they'll come in and let you guys borrow some things for a day and be there to be your tech gurus on how to use a Wii or a PlayStation or something like that. And they provided some of the big, huge flat-screen TVs and some of the consoles and that sort of thing and some of the expertise on how to use them. So it's kind of a borrowing people from somewhere else. So that's something you may want to check into, especially if you don't have a big budget. There are other libraries that have gone out and purchased things for the staff to play with. Topeka Public Library in Topeka, Kansas has done this. They have bought gadgets, cameras and iPods and things like that for their staff to play with. So there may be some grants and things out there that you could do this through as well. Online learning. There are webinars from a variety of sources. Solinet does webinars, WebJunction. There's a program called Opal. It's online programming for all libraries that does online webinars for free as well. OCLC, ACRL, all of these will be listed. I've got a list of resources that I'll show you guys, so you don't have to try to scribble all these down. Vendors also will do webinars for you, sometimes for free, to train you on how to use the databases. So if you find out that your staff don't know how to use some of maybe the Tennessee Electronic Library databases or a new database that you've got or something like that, contact your vendor and say, hey, you know, we need some training on this. Can you do that, you know, virtually for us and do a webinar? And a lot of times they'll be happy to do that, and you can do three or four people around one computer or one or two computers and learn some things that way. So now that we've talked about tech training, core competencies, I mentioned those earlier, and these are going to be something that really guides your technology training program. whether or not you want to focus more on 2.0 or on some of the real basic things like how to troubleshoot the computers you've got and the printers you've got and that sort of thing. Core competencies are going to be the skills, knowledge, abilities, and attributes that employees across an organization are expected to have to contribute successfully within a particular organizational context. So basically, this is what you expect your employees to know in order to work within your organization. This is going to be a little bit broader than just the general task descriptions that you get on your job descriptions and that sort of thing, where, you know, they're expected to help patrons and all of those really general things. And like I said, this is going to be the building blocks for doing a technology training program. Once you spell out your core competencies, it's going to provide your staff with really, really well articulated things that they are expected to do. It makes performance assessment a little bit easier because you have a guideline that both you and the staff know about where you can say, okay, you know how to do all of these things. These are all of the things that we want you to know how to do. And you can go through and check those off and talk about which ones they do and don't know how to do and why and that sort of thing. It's going to improve customer service. Again, if your staff know how to help your patrons are going to be happier, and they're going to, you know, tell other people about how great the library is and how they help them with their iPod or with their Flickr account or, you know, get on YouTube and that sort of thing. It's going to create a culture of learning because if you have these competencies spelled out and the staff realize that, hey, I don't know how to do that, they're going to have to go off and learn how to do that. And maybe by creating sort of that forced learning environment, they're going to get more curious about other things that are related to stuff they have to know how to do. Like I said, it provides a basis for skills assessment. It's going to give you a checklist. You can go through and find out what they do and don't know how to do. And after you've trained your staff, it's going to help free up your IT staff for other projects. You don't have to call the IT department to come out to the reference desk and reset the computer every time that it needs to be done. Once you can get your staff comfortable doing that sort of thing, your IT staff can work on bigger projects and hopefully improve IT at your library in that way. For creating your core competencies, this is one place where we actually do want to have a committee do this. You don't really want to do this sort of from the top down. You want to get staff input. Ask everybody. Ask all of your staff, from the part-time people who are working, you know, nights and weekends, to the management, to tech services. All people in your library should know that you're working on spelling out core competencies for them. And you should use their input. Don't just ask them for it. Actually use it. Because they're the ones who know what they do every day, all day. They know what they don't know how to do when patrons ask them. You should also make sure that you let your staff know that once you get this list done, they don't have to know everything on it right now, because that's going to make them a little nervous. I know that if I found out my management was working on core competencies for me and I didn't know everything to do on that list, does that mean I'm going to get fired tomorrow or what? So make sure to let them know that this is going to be their goal for the next few years or months or whatever, to learn how to do all of the things on this list. They don't have to know how to do it tomorrow because that's going to be really overwhelming. You should also make sure you set up a rewards and consequences. Make sure that you stick with these as well, because it's just going to hurt your library and your patrons if you don't have some kind of consequences for people who don't meet the core competencies. If you have one staff person that's having to say, I don't know how to do that, to your patrons, it's going to make your library look bad, and it's going to make the other staff a little bit resentful when they have to pick up the slack for that person. So make sure that those consequences are being stuck to. It is tough, and I realize that nobody likes to tell somebody that they, you know, need to work on this particular skill, but it's for the good of your library and for your customer service that you do that. You should also work with IT and find out what they get asked all the time, whether it's from other library staff or from your patrons or something like that. Make sure to ask them, hey, what did my staff ask you about all the time? You know, why? What is it that we need to know? And they may be able to give you some insight on things that people didn't realize they were asking. You also want to make sure that you include ongoing education in that, so that people know that the lifelong learning idea is part of their core competency. They should be able to show you that they are learning things every year or every month or something like that. There's a lot of decisions to how to decide what your core competencies should look like. You can structure them by staff position, by competency. If you do a Google search or your favorite search engine for core competencies in libraries, you'll get lots and lots of examples. And I've got some examples to show you guys later, too. But you're going to want to decide on categories, broad, moderate, and specific. You can decide on formatting if you want it to be in a grid format. Work for me. If you want it to be in a grid format, like if you want to have just, you cross off the ones, you put a little check mark in the ones that they have met, and then you have a little space for notes where you can make a note of why they haven't met a particular competency yet or something like that. You can have a short outline, which looks a little bit like the slides I've got, you know, where you just sort of bullet point. This competency includes these five things and that sort of thing. You can also do a narrative paragraph, which honestly, in my opinion, seems like it would be a little more difficult than the grid format or the outline format, but it's completely up to you, of course. They're your competencies. So let's see. Okay, so once you get your competencies created, you can create a training program. And there are six sections to creating a training program. Setting goals, of course, you want to decide what is the point of my training. What do I want to do? Do I want to have staff be more comfortable with technology? Do I want them to make sure that they know what we've got already? All that sort of thing. If it's just training because you think your staff being trained on something, and so you're just making up things to train them on, they're going to pick up on that and not really be interested in training. It can be based on your library's mission statement or vision statement. Of course, it's going to want to be based on your core competencies so that you can sort of tie that into their everyday jobs. Participants learn best when they're engaged in their own learning and are motivated to learn. So if you're not providing them with a good reason to go to these trainings, they're not going to want to go. And whether that's rewards or tying it into their job or something like that, you're going to need to set goals for your training. Of course, you're going to want to establish competencies, which I've already talked about, because this is going to help you see the areas that most of your staff need training in and find out what exactly they're supposed to be learning. You may discover that none of your staff know how to use the nifty new thing that you installed last week, so maybe you want to train them on that. Or you may discover that not all of your staff know how to do something in your ILS, and so you want to train people on how to do that so everybody can do it or something like that. So you're also going to want to assess people's needs and skills. You can do surveys. You can do a big giant checklist based on the competencies or something. You can do interviews. You can ask your staff, hey, what do you want to learn about? What do you think you need to learn about for your job? Or what's the latest new widget that you've heard about that you're interested in and you think could be good for our library? You can do informal assessments, kind of an ear to the ground, water cooler talk sort of thing. Just keep an ear out for what your staff are talking about, what your patrons are talking about too. What the latest kids' gadget is or something like that. And also you can base it off of your performance reviews if you find out your staff are missing things. When you're developing curriculum, this can get kind of tricky. You need to consider the skills and the needs of your staff. So if you have lots of different skill levels, it can be difficult to develop a curriculum that's going to cover all of those. So you may want to develop levels of a curriculum so that you can, you know, get everybody up to the same skill level and then build on it from there. You also want to make sure that you think about how this is going to be updated, because especially with technology things get outdated very quickly. So you want to make sure that it's something that's pretty easy to update. It's not based on stuff that you have to have versions of software and that sort of thing for. Make it a little bit general. You need to decide on your class format so that you know if you want to have a lecture like I'm doing now, or if you want to do something a little more hands-on or something like that, just if you want to do a petting zoo sort of thing or something like that. You can borrow from existing resources. There's lots of places online where you can find training for library staff. There is the Library Best Practices for Success Wiki, which is where lots and lots of libraries have gone to share their resources. Web Junction is another place where people are sharing training resources for how to train their staff. So there's lots of places you can borrow from to build your curriculum. You don't have to start from scratch. When you're delivering your training, you want to try to keep classes under 2 hours. If you need to have an all-day training, break it up. Give people a bathroom break, a quick coffee break, 10 minutes or so. 2 hours is about all people can stand to sit still and listen. So if you want to have training that's all day long, make sure that you break it up and let people have a break, have a chance to wander around, check their email, check their cell phone, all that stuff. 2 hours is about the max before my brain starts to go crazy and wander around. So you want to deliver your classes sequentially, because if you're building skills, you want to make sure that everybody has taken, you know, class number one before class number two, before class number three. Just like colleges have prerequisites for their classes, you can have prerequisites for your training to make sure that everybody's at the same skill level. And if some of your staff, again, have higher skills, if they can prove that they, you know, can test out of sort of that first level of class or second level of class. Just make sure that everybody's on the same skill level. The problem with delivering classes sequentially is that somebody can't jump into the middle. They'd have to wait for training to sort of restart in order to get started on that. So if you hire somebody new or something, they may have to wait a little bit before they get trained on everything. Don't forget to ask for questions. Don't forget that people may be confused about some of this stuff. Some stuff may be completely new and foreign to people, maybe something that they're completely uncomfortable with and just don't understand. So make sure that when you do ask for questions, to give them time to formulate their question and raise their hand and ask you. And don't forget to advertise to staff. And this is not just using the new stuff that you're teaching. If you're using Web 2.0, send out emails, send out flyers. Put a notice in the staff lounge, wherever people gather, make sure that you put something about, hey, we're going to be training on this and this date, and make sure that you give them advance notice. Don't say when they come in at 8 o'clock that morning that they've got training at 8:30 and, you know, we're all going to meet in this room. So give them a little time to sort of prepare their brain to learn things that day and prepare to, you know, make notes and clean off their desks so that they can take a day or a couple of hours and learn stuff. And make sure to try to provide a handout or something that they can take notes on and reference later. Especially if you're teaching new skills, you want to make sure that maybe you list out all of the steps to doing this new thing on a sheet that they can take with them so that when they, you know, 3 weeks later when they finally get asked about it, they can go, oh, I had training. Where did I put that sheet? And go and get the sheet and use it sort of as a cheat sheet for helping people. You also want to make sure you evaluate your training so that you can find out what's working and what's not. If your staff don't learn by lecturing, then you probably don't want to train them by lecturing at them. You want to find some other way to do that. So you want to take surveys, an informal interview again, feedback forms, little, you know, those little quick half sheets you can do. Did you like this training? Did it work for you? Performance reviews, again, are going to be a good way to evaluate your training. And also that sort of ear to the ground water cooler talk. If people are saying, man, I really hated that thing. It was awful. To sit there for 3 hours and have somebody talk at us or something like that. Or if they're saying, hey, that was really, really cool. I want to do that again. You know, you can sort of take that and run with it and learn a little bit more about how your staff learn. So that brings us to, once you've trained your staff, you want to make sure that they know how to keep up with things. And how to sort of keep learning new things on their own even. Keeping up, they can do conference topics and workshop topics. If you can't afford to send, you know, all of your staff to a conference that looks really, really cool, a lot of times the conference information will be available online, whether it's just the descriptions of the sessions like we had before we got here. And you can take that and do your own research on that particular topic if something looks really interesting. A lot of times after the conference, you'll find slides and audio and things like that online. Like this session is going to be available online pretty much as soon as I get done. I'm going to go post it. So you can find these slides online. So a lot of times you can find conference content online after the conference, even if it's been a couple of years later. So if there's something you're really interested in and you can't make it to the conference, check online. Make sure that you sort of make a note of when the conference ends and check online and see if that conference material is available. The same thing with workshops. WebJunction and Solinet and a lot of those places that do webinars will archive that material so that you can go back and look at it later. So if there was a really cool webinar that you heard about a month too late, check and see if it was archived and see if you can actually watch it later. You won't be able to participate and ask questions, but like you'll at least be able to get that material from them. Another thing I've talked about is the ear to the ground method, where you listen to what your patrons, you know, your younger patrons, your grandchildren, your children, college students, all that. What are they talking about? So if you hear about something that's new and really cool, maybe ask one of them about it. Say, hey, what is this that you're talking about? You know, what can you tell me about it? And see if you can get a little description from them and then maybe go learn some more about it on your own. If it's a new website, go and check it out and see if it's something that you might be interested in. My favorite way to try to keep up is using RSS feeds. I have a lot of blogs that I read that are related to libraries and also to knitting. So it can be a little personal. But those RSS feeds basically goes out and collects all of those blogs for me, and I can read them all in one place instead of having to go to 15 different websites every single day to see what people may have written. RSS feeds, Google Reader and Bloglines, there are places that will collect those for you so you can go to one place. It can get a little overwhelming if you don't check it in a week and you come back and discover that there's 1,000 things that you haven't read last week, but that's when you can mark them all as read and hear about it later. One thing I do want to make sure to say about keeping up is how you choose to keep up with new and emerging things is your own personal preference. My version of using an RSS feed and coming back to 1,000 things that have not been read once I get back from a conference, you may find that really, really overwhelming, and it may not work for you. So you may want to do, you know, pick a couple of websites that you do visit every day and use those to keep up, or using the ear to the ground method or some other method. It's really personal preference on how to keep up. Which is the thing I really struggled with about this presentation, is how to tell people to keep up with new stuff. And really, it's just a matter of keeping your ears open and keeping your curiosity alive and active, and that whole lifelong learning thing. If you are interested in learning about the world around you, you will find new technologies and new ways to use them at your library. So really, it's just a matter of keeping your eyes open and your ears open and finding what works best for you. I have friends who refuse to use an RSS reader. They'd rather have things emailed to them. And it's kind of the same idea. Those blog posts are emailed to their email, and then they can read them at their leisure instead of going to visit websites every day. So I'm going to show you a couple of my latest technologies, if this will hopefully work. How many of you guys have heard of Twitter? Okay, I am actually fairly active on Twitter, and I'm going to hope that nobody has said anything embarrassing when I click on this, because that's always the chance you take with Twitter. If I can get out of here. Oh, it looks like my wireless is not working. But Twitter, for those of you who haven't heard of it, is called microblogging. It's 140 characters or less of updates that you send. If you're familiar with Facebook and MySpace, you can do updates within those programs as well. And this is kind of like the status update without the Facebook around it. I can tell people that I'm presenting at a conference right now, and they can all say hello to y'all from around the world. Let's see if we can get this working here. They can all say hello to you from around the world or something like that. So it's just sort of a little way of keeping up with people and what they're doing all day and maybe what they had for lunch and things like that. So it can get really overwhelming if you're following hundreds and hundreds of people. Or it can be something really good with keeping other people up to date. And I have found that it's really useful for asking reference questions. There are a lot of librarians that I follow on Twitter who we will get stumped by a reference question when we're on the reference desk. And so we'll throw it out to Twitter in 140 characters or less, which is kind of a challenge sometimes. But you can get an answer back within a few minutes from somebody else who may have heard of something that you haven't heard about, or some new resource. And of course, my wireless isn't working right now. Twitter can be found at twitter.com, though, and you can sign up, or you can just watch things scroll by and see what people are using Twitter for. Another service that I use a lot is Meebo. Have you guys ever heard of Meebo? A lot of people are using it for chat reference now because it's free, and it's a little more reliable than some of the chat reference programs that we've been sold, like Question Point and that sort of thing. And you can put a Meebo widget on your library's website where people don't even have to know a screen name to contact you. There's a box that says, type here to talk to a reference librarian. So if they type there, it pings you and lets you know that somebody wants to ask you a question. And you can sign in from any computer anywhere in the world, pretty much. So you could have staff, you know, staffing the reference desk, and they're sitting in their office doing their work and answering questions as they come in through Meebo. I'm also pretty active on Facebook, so if you have a Facebook account and you want to friend me, I'm Courtney Stevens. And Facebook, I have found, is just a good way to keep track of people and where they're going and who's going to be at the TLA conference and who's going to be at the ALA conferences and that sort of thing. And I keep track of my real-life friends on there as well, as we call them. So I can keep track of who's doing what and who's dating whom and all of that sort of thing. So Facebook is a little more personal. But it is a good way to sort of keep track of people and communicate with people that you may not see every day. There's a few gadget blogs that I like to read as well. One of them is called Pop Gadget, and it's aimed at women. It tells me the latest cell phones and the latest laptop bags and the latest widget that came out that might be really cool to look at. That you might not hear about otherwise. And a lot of times I don't actually go through and learn any more about that gadget other than what I read on Pop Gadget. But I can say, hey, I heard about that new cell phone that does something really crazy on Pop Gadget. And then, you know, I have a little more awareness of that sort of thing. There's another one called Cool Tools, and that's a very, very wide variety of things. They're not all tech related. Sometimes they review books. Sometimes they review gardening tools. It's just cool tools that may come in handy for lots and lots of things. And then there's another one called Boing Boing, which is very tech related, and it covers websites and gadgets and all sorts of things. And I will put those all on a list for you guys as well. Oops. We'll go back through here. There we go. Pop Gadget, Cool Tools, and Boing Boing. And the resources that I've talked about at this presentation can be found in my Delicious account. I have tagged them all as TLA2008. So if you go to Delicious /library_chick/TLA2008, you'll find a list of all of like Web Junction and Opal and all of those things that I told you guys where you could find online, different training resources and things like that. If you want a copy of these slides, they will be available for download probably later this afternoon if you'd like them that soon, at my blog, which is library-chick.blogspot.com. And like I said, I'll make these available, and there should be a recording, I hope, available on the TLA website sometime in the not-too-distant future. And on my blog, so. Yes, so this presentation will be available for you guys to use for future reference, and you'll get to see all of my notes that I've scribbled on the bottom of the slides if you download the actual file. So you get a little cheat sheet, too. So are there any questions about things that I may have talked about or anything like that? Any questions about technology I might have talked about or anything? Wow. I must have been really, really clear then, or you're all so confused you don't know where to start. I will be at the conference for the next couple of days, so if you see me around and want to ask me something, feel free to catch me. You can find my contact information on the Belmont Library's website as well as on my blog, so feel free to email me or chat with me or anything like that if you want to. I'm sorry? Yes, sadly.